Welcome to Teachers in America, a production of HMH, hosted by our Senior Director of Community Engagement, Noel Morris. I'm Lish Mitchell. 16-year teaching veteran Perry Hollins joins us on our newest episode of the podcast. Perry teaches fourth grade in the Evanston-Skokie School District in Illinois and has spent the past 11 years infusing an African-centered pedagogy into the curriculum. Before becoming a teacher, Perry worked in radio and television in roles that equipped him with communication skills and creative instructional approaches for the classroom. He earned a BFA in broadcast media from Morris College and a master's degree in teaching from Northeastern Illinois University. He also earned an MS in educational psychology from Capella University with a focus on achievement motivation in Black boys. Perry utilizes his education to create a culturally sensitive, project-based learning environment for independent, flexible thinkers. Now, here are Perry and Noel.
Hey, Perry, welcome to Teachers in America. So excited to get a chance to meet with you. You live outside of Chicago in Evanston. So tell me a little bit about how you got started in teaching and how you ended up in Evanston and all that good introductory things.
Well, I have always been a person that's gravitated towards children. Even as a child, you would always find me with the younger children. I remember vividly being in church at 9 years old. And for some reason, I would always gravitate toward the 1, 2, and 3-year-olds and play with them. And they would always gravitate toward me. And that just became my life. But I never thought about teaching, per se. I just felt like it was just who I was. I initially started off in radio and television. I remember in high school just listening to the radio all the time and like, I want to be a DJ. I want to be an on-air personality one day. So I went to school and got a degree in broadcasting down in South Carolina. And I was working at a radio station out there. And I had got into radio even prior to graduating from college. And so I was down there for about a year and a half working in radio. And then there was a job at the local CBS affiliate station out there. I was an evening assignment editor for that CBS affiliate station in Columbia, South Carolina. And I did that for about a year. And then my father passed away. And I came back to Chicago for the funeral, and my godfather was like, things are changing. Your mom is alone here and things like that. And I was like, I'm trying to build my career out there. And he was like, well, how about you stay with me until you find a job in radio or television? And you get on your feet, you'll be close to your mom. I was like, okay, that makes sense. So that's how I got back to Chicago. And I was working out at a couple of radio stations, one out in Jansville, Wisconsin, which fed into the Madison, Wisconsin market, which is the University of Wisconsin, I believe. And I worked out in Hammond, Indiana at a gospel station that fed into the Chicago market as well. And then I got laid off. They were going through some changes at that radio station. And so I was like, I'm in between jobs, so I'll substitute. And right. I was like, I'll just earn some extra money to try until I get back on my feet, until I find a job, whatever. Went into the classroom. Why did that happen? 15 years later, here I am, still in the classroom. It's been an exciting journey. But when I first went into the classroom, I remember the teacher did not have lessons that made sense to me. So what I did was, and this was a fifth grade class, this was like one of my first classes that I was subbing in. So I went online and I just downloaded lyrics to a song. I made sure that it was developmentally appropriate, of course, for fifth grade. And we just sat and analyzed those rap lyrics to the song. I think it was like a Will Smith song, or it was a Common song. I believe it was Common. I can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe it was The Light. But we did that, and the engagement that I received from the students, they were like, you're the best sub ever. Yeah. I was like, okay, I just made that up on the fly. is that all it takes? You know, and so I've been in love with it ever since, you know, trying to figure out, I think at the heart of everything, I'm trying to figure out this teaching and learning process. How is it that I can have information that I understand and disseminate it in a way that makes sense to the learner? And that's been my passion pretty much, if I had to nail it.
And probably when you think about it, going back to how you had to communicate with 1, 2, and 3-year-olds to make that connection, it's just how you function and how you think around the value of the different ways to communicate. One of the things, Perry, that's interesting, and I tend to think every teacher, I will always find connections, but I too started my career substitute teaching and surviving and figuring things out because I didn't have, a lot of times, no lesson plans. But I want to ask you, on that day where you did that and the kids are like, you're the best sub, how many of them said, will you be back tomorrow? I mean, because that's when you know.
That's exactly.
You've made that hook.
That's exactly the case. And the administrators in the building, they saw that connection right away. And so they were asking me to come back. But one of the things that I remember as well is that the students in the classroom started checking one another, because there was one student in the class that was trying to divert us from the subject. And I just remember other students like, would you stop? Would you give him a chance? And the fact that they were taking over, holding one another accountable, I was like, this is how it works.
Yep. Don't you know, do. I don't, cut right, it out. The man's right, right. Trying to teach.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, that interest level was there. And I was like, okay. But I think it was by accident that I, you know, grabbed the lyrics, but it was something that I think was intrinsically motivating within them to know that, you know, I was young too. I was like 25, 26 at the time. And so it wasn't a large age gap. So a lot of what I was listening to, their parents were listening to, and they were listening to. And so that connection, and I still knew a lot of the lingo and language and slang of the, you know what I mean? I could relate to them in that way. And so that built a relationship that I think is the cornerstone of effective teaching. You just have to really connect with them on their level.
I want to ask you, in the broadcasting and radio and how much you focus on your voice, did you have a signature like sign off or way that you had practiced your voice that is a skill you carry in today, like when you're about to teach something new or try a different lesson?
Most definitely. But it's natural. The fluctuation of the voice, all I have on the radio is my voice to entertain and inform. And so I knew that if I was going to capture the audience, the fluctuation of my voice would be the same as me moving around the classroom or moving around the space. And so being able to do those things, it holds their attention in that way, especially when the different modalities in which you would use to engage someone is limited. So you just have to focus on what it is that you can do and utilize that in multidimensional ways, if that makes sense.
Totally. I mean, it's just a matter of that. There's an element of when you think about the art of teaching that I've always thought there's moments that are also the entertainment, the skills of knowing when to go up, when to go down, when to make it sound like, now there's going to be something so important.
There you go. Oh, you got it. You got it. There it is.
Then they're like, wait, what? You know, I got to get in closer. I can tell you knew everything to do also, because in the first years of teaching and especially substituting, it really is about surviving that day, because you're hoping and you need that to be called tomorrow, because that's your income until you find your first job. Yeah. I wanted to transition and talk about, you went to a historical Black college?
I did.
Okay, so leaving Chicago, going to South Carolina, Was that something, too, that was always part of your decision-making as a young kid? Or
No, it's a story behind that as well. I didn't do too well in school. I couldn't make connections. I don't know why I'm feeling this way right now, but just give me a moment. Just give me a moment. I apologize.
Okay. It's okay.
I just couldn't make strong connections. I had two teachers that I believe that I made strong connections with. And part of it is I wasn't inspired to think beyond the moment. There wasn't enough. Here's what's happening outside of your little world and how it connects to your little world. There wasn't enough of that. And I did have a seventh grade teacher, Miss Green, who inspired me in one way. There was one situation where she had a book by the quantum physicist. I can't remember his name right now, but it was on her desk and it was way above my reading level. But I was so interested in the universe and stars and how the world worked, you know. And so I was like, can I use this? Can I read this book? And she knew that the book was way above my reading level, but she was like, sure, take it home. I only read the first paragraph, and that was all. And that took me forever to get through. I had no idea really what I read, but I knew there was something there. And it sparked my curiosity to want to know more. And that, wow, the world is bigger than just me running up and down the block in my neighborhood. It's bigger than my own little wants and desires. And so I started getting curious about the world around me and how it worked. And so science was my first introduction into learning. And I think that's for most children, really. They just get curious about the world around them and how it works. And once I understood as a teacher how the social sciences can work in the same way as our physical sciences, in being able to capture the imagination of a learner, I was like, oh, this is good stuff. You know, and so I've incorporated a lot of the social sciences in the same way that we would teach about the physical sciences into my practice, my instructional practice. I think one of the things, you know, and this is in retrospect, thinking back on it, but I think one of the biggest difficulties for me was that I noticed differences before I was able to notice commonalities. And I say that because living in Evanston, you know, it's a microcosm of what I usually say, it's a microcosm of the United States, and that it's very diverse, but highly segregated in a lot of ways. And, you know, Evanston is working on it, but it's also a national problem that needs to be addressed as well. And I think we need that double prong of approach to it. But I think that because I was noticing differences first, it ostracized me from engaging and asking those questions that really were driving my understanding of life. And so I shut down because there was no room for me to make a connection with what was happening. I wasn't a dude that always got into trouble. I wasn't affluent. I was a low middle class student who came to school. I didn't have on the best pair of shoes. I wasn't wearing the nicest clothes. And so those were judgments that were being passed on me. I didn't know all of the latest trends that were happening or whatever. So my mom was very conservative in a lot of ways. And so when I entered into a classroom space, I could only see differences. And I'm like, well, where did that come from? Why wasn't I able to see the connections between us so that it would drive me to want to reach out and drive others to want to reach in? Where were the mirrors? We talk about this idea of windows and mirrors. There was a lot of windows, but there weren't a whole lot of mirrors in my early education. And it wasn't until, to get back to the point of HBCU, it wasn't until my senior year in high school that I took an African-American history course. And it was the first time where I connected with the teacher in a way where I just admired him. I just admired him. It had nothing to do with anything else, but I was going to listen to him because I just admired him as a human being. He was just this intelligent Black man. And he got me involved in the local chapter of the NAACP here in Evanston. I attended some of the meetings as a senior, and that was really the first time where I felt like I was connecting my education to the larger world and even the local world, where my education became personal, it became local, and it became immediate. Up until that point, I just was just going in and out of school. And then by that time, it was senior year, I didn't really know anything about getting into college. And so I sent out some applications, and Morris College in Sumter, South Carolina was the first college that responded. HBCU, I grabbed my things. A friend of mine who graduated with me was going down to South Carolina to meet with his family. We hopped on the bus and I was there. And it was a really worthwhile experience in the sense of the relationships that I had made down there. And like I told you earlier, I knew that I wanted to get into radio and television. The college really didn't do that for me. It was a small, historically Black college, Morris College. And so I just went to the local radio station as a sophomore and told them I would do anything I needed to do to be a part of this company. You know, I wanted to get into radio. And before I knew it, I was on the air doing the evening drive, which was like urban adult contemporary type music. And it was from 7 to 11. And that's what drove me throughout college to even stay in college, because I was like, okay, I know I need a degree. It just looks good for me to have a degree if I want to get into communications. Yeah, that was that.
I'm laughing because I can imagine like the adults, evening. And
right,
the top
right.
These are not my top five, but your top five.
Right, right, right. I did. They had a local radio station there and I was playing oldies as well. So I got into a lot of music from the 60s and 70s through their radio station as well. Yeah, it was a great experience. But it was a real world experience. It was a practical experience, mm-hmm. which I think is missing a lot of in education right now. And I think COVID has woken us up to that as well.
Hey, teacher friends, I want to introduce you to Innovation for Equity, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting innovative ways to improve life outcomes for Black learners of all ages. Subscribe to Innovation for Equity on YouTube to get the facts and stay informed with IFE Quick Conversations. Hear from education industry leaders like Atlanta Public School Superintendent Dr. Lisa Herring on topics like school reopening and recovery. Learn more about the impact of culturally responsive education in the classroom and gain insights about education investing. IFE Quick Conversations are powered by Innovation for Equity and sponsored by HMH. Now, back to the episode. I just want to come back full circle. A bus from Chicago to South Carolina. I'm sure there's some stories there.
Oh, yeah.
But on the sense of finding a place, Perry, where there's going to be lots of mirrors, I'm just thinking, had to have been the moment you stepped on campus, a sense of calm, which allowed you to now begin to think about your purpose, what you wanted to do next, and your future. Let's talk about that future part and what you were talking about as far as real world application and mm-hmm. your fourth graders, because I agree with you during this pandemic. And even though 10 years ago, people were talking about project-based learning, and I remember it being in the early 2000s, 21st century, everybody jumping on that. But it's taken 20 years and a pandemic to have people think, you know what? Our students can and should be having these real world opportunities to tinker and problem solve and figure it out. So what have you done during the pandemic to stimulate that and have that approach? And what are you hearing and seeing from your students as you begin to transition into what will become the next phase of the new norm?
Yeah, I entered the teaching profession in 2005, which was the beginning of, I believe, No Child Left Behind. And so it was this high stakes, standardized testing environment that I just was initiated into education around. And it's been pretty much the same ever since. And so that's the dilemma, I believe, in a lot of ways for me, and I'm going to speak for myself, is that high stakes testing and standardization of learning has crippled what we believe to be research-based best practices that will move the needle, especially for our Black and Brown children. And so teachers get into this dilemma. I get into this dilemma in the classroom where I'm wrestling with that idea of engagement versus preparation for standardized assessments. And that battle is a cognitive dissonance type of thing, where I'm always like, okay, I know what is best for these children, but I have a responsibility to make sure that they are prepared with the skills and the standards necessary for success in life. But I cannot leave them behind in pursuit of those skills and standards. And so that's where I wrestle. That's where the murky waters is for me. And one way that I try to adjust to that, I just call it a phenomena. And I'll never forget, I had a principal that told me, and this stuck with me, and it continues to drive my thinking, is that the standards are the curriculum. And so for me, when that light bulb went off, that the standards are the curriculum, it revolutionized my practice in the sense that I didn't have to worry so much about the instructional materials that I was using. And when I say instructional materials, I mean the pre-assembled curriculums that come to us from other sources and follow it verbatim. There's a lot of great information in those curriculums that can be utilized, but to say, okay, on March 19th at 2:00, I need to be teaching this. I can't do that. That's, to me, is a disservice to the immediate needs of the child, the local, personal, and immediate needs of the child that is standing and sitting in front of me. I owe it to them to prepare them for their life, utilizing those standards.
And how have you managed and how do you work that out with your administration and the rest of your team?
I teach in a unique program, and the program is an African-centered curriculum, and it's a magnet program within the larger school district. And so we have certain practices in our instruction that is a little bit different than the larger district. So I don't necessarily meet with, I do have a fourth grade team that I meet with, but I also have an ACC team that I meet with. And so I have to balance the needs of the general ed curriculum and the needs of the African-centered curriculum. And there are five essential practices that we use within the African-centered curriculum that supersedes the practices of the gen ed curriculum. So it's a little bit different for me. And there was, and this was intentional. I wanted to get inside of a program where there was a little bit more flexibility in being able to meet the needs of our Black and Brown children. And so when this magnet program was introduced to District 65, I was like, oh, I need to be there.
Is there an application for this magnet program within the school?
Yeah, there's an application process. But once you get in kindergarten, the goal is you'll just follow that trajectory in the ACC program through fifth grade. We do have students that come in throughout the grade okay. levels, and it's usually just a recommendation.
I find that just fascinating. So if you started in 2010 with kindergartners and mm-hmm. they were five, mm-hmm. that first group is 15, 16. Can I ask if in the last 4 years, particularly in this last year, has there been any adjustment to the curriculum or anything to really look and be what is happening in our country today?
This is the struggle of education in general mm-hmm. amidst a pandemic, trying to figure out what the next steps should be. But there is a lot of content out in the world that can be utilized as learning opportunities. And so with the Black Lives Matter movement, the death of George Floyd, the pandemic, and how it has, what I believe, brought to surface the marginalization of Black and brown people in the United mm-hmm. States. And so these are opportunities for us to engage. I usually look for current events as a way to deepen our understanding around these issues. A lot of it is, one of the things that I like to do is when students come on to the Zoom call, is just to have a good 10, 15 minutes of sharing time. And usually conversations like this start to arise. And I just take notes about what's going on in their world and what they're thinking about as they're discussing whatever it is that's on their mind. It's a sharing circle. And that gives me a lot of leverage when I'm planning, because I'm hitting things that are personal, local, and immediate. And then they're also seeing those mirrors like, oh, wait, we were just talking about this the other day. So I think one of the healthiest things that teachers can do at this time, regardless of what curriculum or what program, is listen. Yeah. Listening is one of those culturally responsive practices that I believe that never really get brought up, but just being a good listener and then turning around and helping the students to solve some of those dilemmas or problems or situations that's coming up for them.
You a few times reference personal, local, and immediate. Mm-hmm. Is that your personal framework, Perry? Is yeah. that a framework you've adopted?
I didn't invent the term. The term has already been out there, but I gravitated toward it and latched onto it because it makes sense to me. We should be thinking in personal, local, and immediate ways based in empathy and social justice and justice in general, whether it's environmental justice, whether it's economic justice, racial justice, social, whatever it is, to me, that is the approach. Because as I said earlier, I felt disconnected to my own education in a lot of ways. But it's no one's fault. It's just the historical narrative of the United States. It's a systemic issue, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to counter that's my revolution. That's my personal thing that I believe is driving me. My purpose is to just make learning more personal, local, and immediate, and the children will take over. They'll take it over. But the hard part, like I said in the beginning, was navigating this space between high stakes standardized testing, which is very true and real, and the idea of what is in the best interest of the students that are in front of me. And when I heard that the standards are the curriculum. It drove, it was the light bulb moment that I was like, oh, so the world is the content that we should be addressing.
I lived in Chicago for a while. I was taught you're not supposed to actually say you live in Chicago. Sometimes I'd be like, I live in Chicagoland.
You know it. That's right.
I was like, I lived in Denver.
They get offended by that, right?
They do.
I'm in Evanston, okay?
They're like, Noelle, you cannot claim Chicago. You live in Downers Grove.
Right.
Financially, I have these reasons why I've been Downers Grove, but anyway, I find Chicago is just, there's so much history and the richness, and you're right. Like, neighborhoods are such a part of that identity.
Yes.
That I'm curious about you. I heard you mention you're still on Zoom, so I'm thinking you're still virtual.
We're in a hybrid space right now.
Okay, so let's talk about this. It's, you have your classroom, which I am venturing to guess your students walk in. It's part of the identity. How have you established that in the virtual space? And how would you define the identity of the class and the students that you're working with remotely?
One of the things that I have learned is that remotely, you can't play teacher. You can't have a teacher role. You really have to turn yourself into a learner and really get curious about what it is that you're teaching, because they can smell fake a mile away. And if you're faking them out, their screens are going to go off. And it happens all the time to me as well. And I'm like, okay, how can I make this at least more of an emotional connection? And so for me, it really boils down to engagement. When I first started, all students were remote. And like I said, I would open it up with just sharing, and we would just talk, and I would really get curious about their life. Tell me more. And that built a trust in them that, like, oh, he actually is curious, because he's using all of this time in the beginning to just get curious about my life and the things that's going on, to the point now where, you know, they're sharing almost everything with me and what they're working on outside of the Zoom space. I have daily themes. Like, Monday is Motivation Monday. And so when I put up my Google Slides for Monday morning, it's always in the stream something about what's keeping you motivated, what's going to keep you motivated throughout the week. And I use that as content to teach, even though they're engaging with one another about topics. And sometimes the topics can get a little off, where I'm like, okay, let's clean it up. What's going on here? Well, they're fourth graders, so sometimes they want to go on tangents. But I'm using that as content for instruction. You know, I'm like, okay, I can bring these things back up at some point. We have Talent Tuesday. What is your talent? Wednesday is Wisdom Wednesday. So we'll look at, like, African proverbs. Thursday is Black Excellence Thursday. And then Friday is Flex on Them. And just basically, what can you do that nobody else can do? You know, like, flex on them. What have you been learning this week? What are you doing?
Yes.
You know, and so that keeps them engaged for the most part throughout, you know, the day. And I can always go back. And when I'm thinking about how I'm going to introduce a lesson, okay, what did DeAndre say today? Oh, he said that he was going to his friend's house who has a very hyper dog and he's scared of dogs. All right, I'm going to try to figure out a way to incorporate that into compare and contrast. Okay, compare two different types of dogs. Which one would you think? You know, so if it's studying text structure or something like that. And that way there's an emotional connection to the content so that I can drive home those standards that I need to be addressing. And it's a lot of that, because just trying to buy into the business as usual, I'm the teacher and you're the student, I'm going to show you, and they're going to turn off their screen and you're just looking at a blank screen by your, you know.
I love that, Perry. I want to make sure I got this correct. Friday is Flex on Them. So I'm coming like, you can't beat me at this.
Right.
Is that
right,
okay?
Right. I'm playing baseball now and I'm practicing and I was able to catch 3 fly balls today during practice. Okay. You flexing on them. Who's next? Right. That sort of thing. So just something that, keeps them thinking about what's going on, personal, local, and immediate for them. And then I'm able to use that information in ways to keep the learning progressing around those standards that I need to be addressing as well.
It's a community in a way that you're bringing that in, that even though they have all been remote together, they are a community.
And that's and that is the bottom line. If you don't have a community where they feel like they can open up their mic and have conversations with one another, with me present or not, in a healthy and constructive way, then, you know, I'm not really doing much of anything, because that is really the point, I believe, of education to begin with, is to for them to bring out themselves and for others to be able to do the same. And we have construction of new knowledge based off of all of that. I don't want to present it as something that is like it's working like a charm, but that is the goal.
About we're always in the process and getting better and showing that for students. For the students who came back face to face, did you have any teacher nerves of that first time? Like, you've seen their faces, you've met them, they're online, and then they're coming back and now they have on a mask. Did you have any moments of like, how am I going to remember who's who, some of those favorites? Or are you the teacher that looks in the eyes and knows students' eyes and it doesn't matter? You're going to know them.
Again, my situation is a little unique because they're in a magnet program. So they're a cohort and they travel through the grade levels together. So I'm already having my eyes on them when they're in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third. So I knew them for the most part. So as they gravitate toward me, it's just, okay. That's one of the strengths of the program, is that we're able to build this community with one another. But at the same time, I didn't know them as learners. I just knew them as people. We would have conversation, but it wasn't in the structured way of a classroom. And that's a little bit different. And so seeing them on Zoom and trying to get an assessment of their personality and socialization practices when all you're doing is seeing their upper body was difficult. I reached out to parents. Communication with parents has doubled for me this year, as in previous years. Like, I'm meeting with parents a lot more throughout the week than I did. And what I have noticed also, I know there's this stigma out there about Black fathers and their lack of participation in the educational matters of their child. But because of Zoom and the flexibility of online learning, there's a lot more participation and engagement around there. And I think it's always been there, but they just participate differently.
Right. And they're also, just the pandemic has had us all look at our children differently and the things that they know. So Perry, I want to ask you, and I ask every teacher, I'm walking into class. So I need to be hype. I need to be ready. What walk-up song is playing as I'm walking into class?
Man, let's see. It would probably be something by Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
That would be something that I think that inspires me. I also am a big fan of Lupe Fiasco, who's out of Chicago. That would be some music that you would possibly hear. Let's see. There's just so much. Stevie Wonder all day long.
Okay.
If I had to choose one, it would probably be Stevie Wonder.
I am so glad, Perry, that you've been a guest on Teachers in America. Thank you. Thank you, Perry.
Let me just thank you for this opportunity as well. My passion is connecting. I love connecting with people. And it is my hope that as a society, that we continue to connect with one another in ways that move beyond the superficial, but we're also respecting what one another is bringing to the conversations. And so for me, that is what I strive to do as a classroom teacher, is to do more connecting through just active listening. I really appreciate the time that you will have taken to just to get my thoughts and opinions about my practice. And so if I said anything that might have been out of what people were expecting, I am a work in progress, and I'm always trying to learn new things to grow. I just want to leave it at that. So thank you.
Well said. Thank you, Perry. Hey, friends, it's back to school season. As I think back and I listen to Perry's episode again, I want to always remember and reflect on the importance of listening, having those qualities that we know are our strengths and using those to our advantage. So Perry was a DJ. He has a voice. He has an ability to hear those hooks, and he knows how to grab the audience. So let's think about that. How are we going to use our strengths as we go into the classroom? No matter what, let's get out there and make those relationships. And as Perry reminded us too, let's not always think about what might have not been great with our experience, but let's use that again to catapult us into a great experience with our students. Let's reflect on the one teacher who did make a difference. And even though pedagogy and times may have changed, what can we take from our relationship that we had with that teacher to make us an even better teacher? So just like any great DJ, just like any great teacher, let's get back out there. Let's influence, let's listen, and let's get our groove on. Until the next episode, your friend, Noelle.
If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Teachers in America podcast, please email us at shaped@hmhco.com. Be the first to hear new episodes of Teachers in America by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate, review, and share it with your network. You can find the transcript of this episode on our Shaped blog by visiting hmhco.com/shaped. The link is in the show notes. Teachers in America is produced by HMH. Thanks again for listening.